From the nation's capital, this is DC Public Safety. I'm your host, Leonard Sipes. The program today, ladies and gentlemen, is on faith-based initiatives. You know, we have a very large faith-based initiative here in the District of Columbia under my agency, the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency. We've had 2,000 offenders participate since the program began in 2002. We have 326 offenders participating now. We have 108 faith-based institutions. They are joined by 86 community organizations and 500 mentors. So this is an extraordinarily large program. Christine Keels, who is the program manager of the Faith-Based Initiative, she's the person who has put all this together, done an extraordinarily good job, an amazing job of really making this program sing. One of the things that she's done is to create special emphasis programs, or special programs that go along with the faith-based environment. I'm going to list just a few. Women's empowerment, a relapse prevention, grief counseling, job coaching, parenting skills, family reunification, relationship restoration, housing assistance, and a reintegration support group. Joining Christine Keels today at our microphones is Marvin. We're not going to use Marvin's last name. He's currently under the supervision of my agency, again, Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency. We are a federal parole and probation agency here in Washington, D.C. And Julia, we're not going to use Julia's last name either. Again, she's currently under supervision of CSOSA, my agency. And to Christine and to Marvin and to Julia, welcome to DC Public Safety.
Thank you for inviting us.
Okay. Christine, how in the name of heavens did you put all this together? I mean, this isn't a program, it's a nation. I mean, you've got a lot of programs here that in the time that you've been in charge of the faith-based program that you have pretty much instituted. And the amount of people, the amount of faith-based organizations, churches, synagogues, mosques, so the amount of organizations, the amount of people, the amount of community organizations that have been involved in this have grown substantially. So how did you do all this?
Well, I have a very awesome team working with me of three cluster lead faith institutions, Israel Baptist Church, Greater Mount Calvary, Holy Church, and Covenant Baptist United Church. And they are very, very supportive, as well as all the staff here at CSOSA. And so what we have done is looked at what are the needs, and we have developed programs to meet those needs and classes and workshops. And so we're actively engaged in helping to make people's lives whole.
Now, the whole idea behind a faith-based program, and we have to say this right from the very beginning, because you go and join a mentor from a faith-based institution, it doesn't matter if that person is Baptist, Catholic, Jewish, a member of the Islamic faith. That person is not asked to buy in to that faith. He or she is simply receiving services from a mentor from that organization. So there's no pressure whatsoever to involve that person under our supervision in their religious life, correct?
That's absolutely right. There's no proselytizing. But we are focusing on the fact that the faith institution is the number one institution in the community. So we want to reconnect people to those institutions that are in walking distance from where they live. But again, no proselytizing and no pressure.
But you know, the interesting thing is what you just said. The faith-based organizations, the church, the mosque, the synagogue, they are the center points of any community in this country. They are the power sources. They pretty much have an amazing array. Some of these churches, mosques, and synagogues have an amazing array of services that they can provide. They're out there as a mentor. We hook them up with somebody who's currently under our supervision, and they can get an array of services. It's just not a friendship. It's just not mentoring. It's just not helping that person. These organizations also provide a massive array of services.
That's correct, from food to housing, clothing, mentoring, support, counseling. So it's a natural connection.
And there's a long tradition here in Washington, D.C., and I would imagine every city in the United States would make this claim that, again, the faith-based institutions are the rocks that their communities are built upon. And you know, offenders come out of the prison system, they generally tend to hang out on a corner, which gets them in trouble. They generally tend to hang out with other organizations or gangs, which gets them into trouble. The faith-based organization will strike me as being a gang for good. So instead of, you know, that person needs companionship, that person needs guidance, that person needs people to embrace him or her, wouldn't you rather that person be involved in a faith-based organization than hanging out on the corner? Isn't that the whole idea behind the program?
Well, let me update you on your terms. We now call it pro-social. We don't call it a gang. And so we're looking for excellent pro-social community support. And the faith-based institutions provide that, from counseling groups as well as activity groups and events that our offenders can attend.
Okay. All right, Marvin, it's your turn. Now, you're working. You're no longer involved in the faith-based program. All of your goals have been pretty much accomplished. How did you do that? Tell me a little bit about your story. How did you get involved in the faith-based program, and how did you accomplish all your goals?
Oh, well, I met my mentor through SRTP program. I was at Lucy Sosa, and I kept in contact with him for, maybe a month or two.
Mm-hmm.
And after I lost contact with him, I just decided to do what was supposed to be done anyway, to try to stay out from going back and forth to jail and be a better individual and a father.
Right.
So I just stayed away from the past crowds and spent more time with my family.
Did you find the faith-based program to be helpful?
Yeah, I found my mentor. He was real helpful. He was like somebody. He called and tried to keep in contact with me, basically like somebody that really cared, even though I just met him.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really not too good with just associating with people like that. But the little time that I did know him, though, he was okay.
Now, a lot of the people coming out of the prison system, they're pretty suspicious of everybody and everything. How comfortable were you with your mentor? You just said that you were a little uncomfortable with this. I mean, most people feel that, you know, coming out of the prison system, feel that everybody is out there, even if they're trying to help them, they're doing it for a reason. They're not really doing it because they really want to help they really don't want to help the person under supervision. There's got to be another motive. Did it take a long time for that person to break the ice, to get to know you, to get to talk to you, to build up your confidence?
No, it was his conversation, the way he spoke, the way he didn't seem like this was a job. This seemed like this something he wanted to do, like he wanted to help me, he wanted to look out for me.
Right.
So I decided to start talking to him a little more, and the times that we did talk, it was more like a friendly conversation than this is something that I have to do or somebody I have to talk to. But it was more genuine. We was more basically like friends almost.
Got it. And how important was that to you in terms of making your transformation from prison to the community? How important was that relationship?
I mean, it was important because he tried to make sure he called and checked up, make sure my kids and everything was okay. And that type of motivation just helped me motivate to do what I was supposed to have done when I did come on the streets.
If everybody who came out of the prison system had a mentor like you did, do you think that it's going to cut down on people going back to crime, going back to drugs, going back to the corner? Do you think it would be a big help? Do you think it would be of marginal help? How much of an impact? If everybody had a mentor, what do you think the impact would be?
I mean, it could help, but it's all on what they do, what their mind frame is.
Yeah.
Because as much as a mentor try to help, if you don't want no help,
right,
you're going to still do what you do to go right back the way you just came from or whatever you want to do.
Right. But a lot of people coming out of the prison system, their lives, you know, 80% have histories of substance abuse. A lot of folks coming out of the prison system have mental health issues. A lot of people coming out of the prison system don't have a job history. I mean, they do need help. They do need somebody to guide them, don't you think?
Yeah, I think they do need help. A lot of people do need help. And a lot of people need to help themselves by their thinking. If they don't come out wanting to do it, No matter how much help you give them, they're not going to do it.
And you know what, Marvin? In 20 years of doing programs, radio and television programs, interviewing folks caught up in the criminal justice system, everybody has pretty much said that, is that you've got to have it inside your heart that you really want to change, that you really are going to change. So you're right. What you're saying is I've heard from everybody else. It's not necessarily the programs, but the programs do help. I mean, you've got to have that intestinal fortitude. You've got to have that determination that you're going to succeed. But some people, you know, how many people have I run into in life who said, I'm not going back to prison, but ended up back in prison? You know, sometimes a mentor can make all the difference, and I'm just wondering if that's right or wrong.
No, that's you're right. You're absolutely right, because a lot of people need help regardless, and just if it's somebody they can sit down and talk to, that could be a start. They might be individuals that didn't like to listen in their past time. So sitting down listening can help them in their future now. So somebody want to sit back and speak to you and they not telling you what to do. They talking to you. They mm-hmm. ask you and they trying to help you. So that means a whole lot. Then somebody saying, go do this.
Mm-hmm.
And you like, I really don't want to, so I'm not. Instead of, come on, let me go with you while we do this.
Right. Mm-hmm. All right. Julie, I'm going to go over to you. I'm not going to use your last name. You're currently under supervision. You're a homemaker. You have three grandchildren at home, so thank you very much for having the fortitude to take care of three grandchildren. You said that your goals were to get sober, to be a better parent, and you're looking for work. How are you going to find work and take care of three grandkids at the same time? That's a huge job.
Well, actually, at this present time, my grandchildren do not reside in the same home as I do, but I do babysit them a lot and I do spend time with them a lot more now than I have in the past. Far as finding work, when I completed the Lifetime Makeover, which is a faith initiative-based group, it gave me more confidence in myself. And then someone will probably say, well, why would you need to go to a group, you know, to believe in yourself again? But sometimes in life, when you've been in the criminal justice system and you're already labeled by society that, you know, this person got locked up and, you know, they're just no good and they can't reenter back into society and they can't, you know, do anything but the same old things again, these groups help. Personally for myself, it helped me with my self-esteem. It made me believe that I always wanted to be a homeowner, that I know one day I could be a homeowner. For all the goals and dreams that I've ever had in life, I believe now more so than ever that I can do these things. And it was all from being a part of that group.
Now, if the group wasn't there, if you came out of the prison system and the group did not exist and you were entirely on your own, now you would have what most agencies call a parole and probation agent. We call them community supervision officers here in the District of Columbia. But if you didn't have the auspices of the faith-based group, if you didn't have all of these various programs that we talked about at the beginning of the program, where would you be now?
I think it goes back to the statement that Marvin made. It's all up to the individual, but I found with inside myself, with the group, it helped. It's like unity. It's like a small family. It's a lot of support. It gives you that initiative that you want to do better, you know, and you're not labeled, and it's like a family, you know, and it's just so many things that you know you always probably could do, but, you know, you really know now that you can do it because there's so much support. You know, and it's people that really care. It's not just groups that they've thrown together and they say, well, you have to do it because you're on probation or your probation officer suggested this. You're selected, you know, for these groups, and it's because you're in compliance and you're doing the right things. And also, even if you're not in compliance, some of the groups are there to help you because they want you to get in compliance and be able to get back out in the work world, in society, to be able to live your life, you know, as a normal person without drugs and alcohol and mm-hmm. do all of the things that we should do anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think it's awesome. I really do personally. A lot of people probably would say, well, you know, I don't want to do this and that. I already have to report, you know, have to do your analysis test. You know, they got enough, you know, they got me doing enough things. So why should I do this? But that's the whole secret to it. That one thing that they want you to do is the answer to everything.
First round, we're already halfway through the program. Even before we get to go, the question number two, I want to reintroduce our guest today, Christine Keels, Program Manager of Faith-Based Initiatives for my agency, Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency, a federal parole and probation agency here in Washington, D.C. Marvin, who is currently under supervision, who is off the program. He's just basically accomplished all of his goals. The last person you heard from is Julia. She is currently under supervision, and she is doing extraordinarily well. I do want to give out the website for Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency, www.csosa.gov, www.csosa.gov. And Christine has foolishly decided to give out her phone number, 202-515-0892, 202-515-0892. I do want everybody to fill up Christine's phone mailbox, and I'll be mentioning the website and Christine's contact point throughout the program. Christine, we do want more people from more faith-based institutions to mentor more people caught up in the criminal justice system. The clusters, although we're the federal government, so we can't accept donations, but our three clusters, the lead faith organizations that pretty much organize the city for us, they can take donations. So if anybody wants to talk about, you know, providing donations to this extraordinarily worthy cause, they can get back in touch with us.
Yes, and let me correct the phone number. It's 202-510-0892. That's 202-510-0892. That's my government cell phone, and I'd love to talk to you.
You know, I've got a group of people up in New York, and I constantly make reference to them because whenever I screw up a name, I get emails saying, Leonard, you can't pronounce a name for to save your life. Now they're going to say, Leonard, you can't get a phone number correct to save your life. So in any event, Christine, you know, the faith-based concept, I government can only do so much. Government has always been somewhat limited in terms of what it is that we can do. We don't have the legitimacy of the faith-based organizations. You go to any Baptist church, you go into any mosque, you go into any synagogue, they're the power. There is the power. Mm-hmm. Here are the people who have access to jobs. Here are the people who have access to resources. Here are the people who care. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, has always been the power of the faith-based initiative. I mean, people caught up in the criminal justice system take a look at people like you and I saying, well, you're paid to do this. But they take a look at the volunteers, and they're saying, hey, they're not paid to do this. So they're doing this because they want to help me get over all the ills that I've had in my life, and they want to see me succeed. Isn't that the heart and soul of the faith-based initiative?
Yes, and for me, it fulfills my mission and helps me fulfill my faith journey as well. And to have people in the community who oftentimes our offenders already know. They already know these folks. They've gone to the faith institutions. They know them as Miss Susie next door or Mr. Charles down the street. And to help them to reconnect with those persons is just so important. And our faith-based mentors are very committed. They are volunteers, which means they are not paid. They come to us with a lot of skills and talents from their professional and life skills, and they're able to bring that back to us and to share it. Mm-hmm. And we're just so appreciative of that. We do provide training on basic mentoring, communication, and a number of other special emphasis skills. Marvin referred to our secured residential treatment facility, which is a place where he participated in a diagnosis of his addiction. And that particular program prepared him for a mentor. A mentor came in and then began to help him remember, what are some of the triggers? What are some of the things that he needs to watch out for? How does he prevent relapse? And so the mentors are just, they're life coaches. Mm-hmm. You know, we think of the word mentor, and we think of when we were teenagers, somebody who took us to the circus and took us to the zoo. And I tell our offenders that if you want to go to the circus or the zoo, we'll take you there. But the basic role of the mentor is to help them make decisions, find resources, and to be able to communicate effectively with their community supervision officers. Mm-hmm. Those are skills that they take into their life beyond CSOSA.
I want to get back to a question to any one of you, but particularly Marvin and Julia. We talked about this a little bit before the program, and that is that people have stereotypes of people who are caught up in the criminal justice system. Now, again, I've been doing this for 20 years, interviewing people caught up in the criminal justice system, both on radio and television. And I said before the program that you know, people have this image in their mind of criminal. And they have a preconceived notion. They've watched the evening news. They've read the newspaper. They've looked at the cable stations, the programs about people in prison. And they say to themselves, I don't want to come into contact with anybody who has been caught up in the criminal justice system. You know, all I hear about are the negatives. Parolee does this, parolee does that. So how do you break through that when you go on the job, when you deal with your mentor, and does mentoring help you overcome that stereotype that society has of you? Julia, I'm going to start with you. So, Julia, you're a criminal.
Well, no, I'm not a criminal. I committed a criminal act. I would say to anyone in the criminal justice system, just know that, you're a human being and you made a mistake. I could use for an example, let's say a doctor. You know, a doctor could have not done a surgery in over 20 years, and he performs a surgery on a patient, and he makes an awful mistake, and it calls for a malpractice suit. Mm-hmm. So does that make him a criminal? I mean, do you want to just take his license from him because he did a poor operation he didn't do? So, I mean, look at people that have committed crimes in the same manner. We deserve, another chance. And some of us don't get it right the first time. Sometimes mm-hmm. we get convicted 2, 3, 4 times. You know, some of us get it right, and then some of us may never get it right. But it's up to that individual. You know, it's up to what you want to do in life. But just as society as a whole, I mean, I believe that overall, maybe every state in the United States, there's one family or more where someone in their family has been in the criminal justice system. Mm-hmm. So if you were to say, well, I'm not going to hire her because, you know, she got caught for shoplifting, and, you know, you have a store, why not give her that chance? You know, because she did it once doesn't mean she'll do it again. It's not that every offender is a repeat offender. And for those that are, they still deserve a chance.
Now, did the faith-based environment give you the strength, give you the confidence, build you up to the point where you're saying to yourself, I don't care what the stereotype is.
Oh,
I know,
very much so.
I know who I am. I know what I'm capable of doing.
Exactly.
I'm not going to let that stereotype get in my way. I'm going to succeed. Now, did the faith-based environment help you get there?
It helped me in a way that only me and my higher power know. And I say that because, as I said before, a lot of people that are in the criminal justice system, they lose faith in themselves. They lose that self-esteem. They lose the love that they have for themselves as a human being.
Right.
Because, like you said, you're stereotyped. But I wake up every morning. I thank God for waking me up. I have wonderful children. I have beautiful grandchildren. I have a loving family overall, which was there anyway before
right.
I even got in trouble.
Right.
I mean, I just believe everyone deserves a chance, and that's just why I use the doctor, for example.
Marvin, I'm going to go and basically ask the same question of you. I mean, people take a look, hear the word criminal, and they have that vision in their mind, and as far as they're concerned, that's it. They say to themselves, you know, we got people without work. We got elderly people who need to be taken care of. We've got schools that need to be taken care of. Why am I going to spend my time dealing with quote unquote criminals? So why would people spend their time dealing with quote unquote criminals?
Okay, I look at criminal. That's just a name tag or something you get when you make a mistake. I ain't too sure. You know what I'm saying? But it's all on. I mean, if you got to go to these type of people and that's how they look at you, then it's really not too much you could do about it. It's something that they got to work on to change. Because there's going to be somebody that's going to have you, whether you got that name tag or not, eventually. And then you just got to do the best of what you could get.
Mm-hmm. So. And isn't, again, I get back to the power of the faith-based program. I get back to that. Because in my mind, if I don't care what situation you are in life, if you surround yourself with positive influences, if you surround yourself with positive people, everybody listening to this program and everybody in this room, including me, has had tough times. And you need to surround yourself with positive people who are going to embrace you and lift you up and say, nuh-uh, what's happening now is temporary. Here is where you're going. And to me, that's every time I've dealt with a faith-based program, that's my takeaway, that there are people there who are willing to help people cross that bridge. Chris?
When we make mistakes, the most important formula is nurture and care. We restore ourselves from any mistakes we make with nurture and care. And so when someone makes a mistake, the rest of the community around that person has to provide nurture and care. In order to be restored, again, I say nurture and care. Even when a baby falls from his first attempt to walk, we provide nurture and care. We say, get up, try it again. And we tell them the new way to try it. We don't say, you know, fall again. We tell them a new way to be able to make that walk perfectly. And life is a walk. We all go through this journey from life to death. And so what we do is continue to nurture and care. And the faith-based institution, that's their number two ingredient, number one and number two ingredient, nurture and care. Mm-hmm. And so we can't afford to give up on anybody.
Well, but people do. We give up on people all the time. We give up and, you know, we say they're a drug addict. I don't have time to deal with drug addicts. They're an alcoholic. I don't have time to deal with alcoholics. They're people who just hanging out in the corner. Why are they always hanging out in the corner? I don't want to deal with that person. That's the image that people have. Now, admittedly, when we first started the faith-based program, it's not like everybody flocked to our side.
That's true.
Okay. And they had to overcome, even the faith-based community had to overcome that stereotype. But now you've built a small army.
Well, I did that by making sure people realize that
you and the cluster coordinators.
My entire team.
That's right. The entire team.
Over 500 people or more.
That's right.
Have put this together. And what we do is put a face in front of that label. We get rid of the label by putting a face, a personality, and flesh around that so that people can see us a human being. Human beings make mistakes, and that we provide nurture and care. And CSOSA is very, very strong on support, resources, and building. And so putting CSOSA with the faith-based community, what a wonderful match of being able to look at how do you help someone restore themselves, revive themselves. You know, someone said to me one time, how do you revive something that didn't exist? If the person didn't have it in them, how do you revive it? Then you create it. You mold it, you shape it, you introduce it, so that you bring that person back to a level of competency so that they can live successfully.
Well, the important thing that people need to hear is that these programs do help individuals caught up in the criminal justice system cross that bridge. Because when they cross that bridge, look at in Julia's case, she's taking care of three children.
That's right.
And there's three human beings who are now taken care of because she was able to cross that bridge. People go from tax burdens to taxpayers. People go from committing crimes to not committing
That's
crimes.
That's absolutely correct.
People go from not taking care of their kids to taking care of the kids. I mean, these are the successes that you pull off routinely. I mean, and Marvin, Julia, chime in here. Am I right or wrong?
You're right. You're absolutely right. Excuse me.
Now, I know you have to have it inside you. I know it's just not the availability of the program. You have to have the willingness to change, as Marvin said at the beginning of the program. But if you don't have the opportunities, if you don't have people surrounding you who are going to lift you up, what happens to you?
Then you'll fall astray. And that's just being honest, and that's facing reality. It feels good with the mentors when they give you their card or their phone number, and they say, you can call me anytime, morning, noon, or night. I mean, how many people will do that? I mean, even your best friend, you know, you call the house at 5 in the morning. What do you want? So for someone to care that much about you, then why should you not care about yourself? If they're willing to believe in you and give you a chance, why can't you believe in yourself? So it's so remarkable, and it's so overwhelming. It was even moments during my sessions at group that, I mean, I'm not embarrassed to say it. I even went home and cried because it was just overwhelming that someone loved me that much and believed in me that much. And it just made me know that I can do anything now. I know it takes time. You know, I didn't make a mistake overnight. My life is just not going to snap in the instant of a finger and become better overnight. But I'm sitting here today doing an interview with you. So this is a big plus. You know, I've never did a radio interview. You know, so it's showing growth already with me.
Marvin, you got just a couple of seconds because we have to give 30 seconds to close. So you've heard everything that I've said in terms of this whole concept of the group coming to your assistance. Does it really make a difference? It made a difference in your life. Does it really make a difference in the lives of others?
Yeah, it can, as long as they let it.
As long as they let it.
As long as they let it. If they don't, I mean, it's basically on the individual. They got to want it, and it's helped their form. It might take time for them to open up for the help, but as long as they let it happen, then it'll work for them.
Okay, Marvin, you've got the final word. I really do appreciate everybody being here today. I love it whenever I do a program on faith-based initiative and hearing the success stories of the people involved. And so to Marvin and Julia, thank you very much. And to Christine Keels and to all the faith-based people within the faith-based community in Washington, D.C. and throughout the United States and throughout the world, we really appreciate it. Ladies and gentlemen, this is D.C. Public Safety. I'm your host, Leonard Sipes. We appreciate your comments. Have yourselves a very, very pleasant day.